Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Hey, yo, what's up, everybody? It's me, Joe Pizzapia, and this is the RotoWire DFS podcast sponsored by FanDuel. I am your host, as always, every Friday, but I could never do it alone because, in fact, I would never want to do a podcast on a Friday ever without John McKechnie. John, how the hell are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, and I had a great omen this morning. I was walking out to my car to come on down to the office, and I see a truck. I see a license plate that's got a Mets thing on it, so I'm already like, that's interesting. The license tag says Jabroni on it.
Oh, my God. Are you sure I'm not stalking you?
You know, I've never not been sure, so I will have to send this to you. But seriously, the Jabroni license plate has made an appearance. It's like a divine thing. So, I mean, that just means this week's podcast is going to be straight gold.
Well, when is it not? I mean, let's be honest.
There.
You know, it's the best podcast around. You know, of all the podcasts, we're the best. It's terrific. It's very, very, very good. If I say very a lot of times, clearly it means it's excellent. We do have a great show for you today. Let's start real quick. Let's talk about another big injury to the NFL, too. Richard Sherman now out for the year. Add him to the list of superstars and personalities that will not be playing in January. It's awful. And, you know, I don't want to blame Thursday Night Football. I don't want to blame the uniforms. I don't want to blame Roger Goodell, but I'm just going to throw this out there. Thursday Night Football, just from the sense of these guys and their bodies and the kind of athletes they are at this point in time in the NFL, is Thursday Night Football and the schedule these guys are running now, is it starting to show the adverse effect a little bit? I mean, you saw Adrian Peterson have 37 carries last week, and it scared the ever-loving crap out of me, and I talked about it on Monday. How the hell is he going to play come Thursday after 37 carries? He's 112 years old. And it's just the product is not going to be good on Thursday. Should we just get rid of Thursday games and go back to the one standalone Monday Night Football? Or if you want to do Sunday and Monday, fine, but is three standalone games too much?
Yeah, I mean, just give Thursday back to college football is what I'm saying, because that works, because they always build in the bye week beforehand so that those games are actually good. You know, a game last night, Pitt versus UNC, two pretty bad teams, played a very entertaining game because they're rested. You know, they weren't asked to play, you know, 4 days after just getting totally battered up. So I totally agree with you where the Thursday night product just isn't as good. And I know we had that stretch earlier this year where we had a few Thursday night games in a row that were good. And you see the Twitter pundits being like, oh, where's the Thursday night football sucks crowd now? It's like, well, we're just kind of getting lucky. This is more of an aberration. I think more often than not, a Thursday night game in the NFL is probably going to be a poorly played game because these guys are just so banged up and there's no way that they're 100% going out there.
I think we should just give Thursday back to must-see TV from NBC in the 90s. So let's just go back and give it to Seinfeld and Friends and all that stuff. Because honestly, anything's better than watching the Color Rush uniforms on a short week with no practice. It's just not good. I mean, I know we've gotten a couple decent games out of this year, but I don't know, man. It doesn't seem worth it from everything that they're doing. All right, let's get to some worthy analysis here, because that's what we do here on the program. Quarterback, let's start with Dak Prescott. He's top of the board at 8,800. No Ezekiel Elliott this week. And for me, John, I actually think this is a positive for his value. And maybe I'm in the, you know, the minority camp here, but I'm looking at a Dak who's going to have to do a little bit more probably on his own. I think this offense is clearly able to run through him. And I'm not worried about, you know, Alfred Morris and all these guys. We'll get to them in the next segment here. But even though he's 8,800, I can justify in cash games paying for Dak, because against Atlanta, who's a defunct football team right now, I'm okay with the fact that I think he's going to go three times value here, and it's not going to be too hard.
I think another thing that it's worth touching on is a lot of the time the instant analysis will be, oh, Zeke's out, so that, you know, the opposing team is going to know that they're throwing it all the time, blah, blah, blah. Does that really concern you when it's the Falcons? No. Like, they you can tell them what's coming, and they're still not going to be able to stop it. So I'm not worried about Dak at all. I think, yeah, like you said, the volume is going to increase, and I think with that, the production will. I'm not worried about a drop-off in efficiency or anything like that. And it looks like Dez is going to be good to go. It looks like Terrence Williams is going to be good to go. I know both those guys got a little bit dinged towards the end of the Chiefs game, but looks like they're fine. Terrence Williams played, like, the best game I've ever seen him play on Sunday, too. So I think that this passing attack is primed to kind of really take it to the Falcons, honestly.
Yeah, and then underneath him, you've got Tom Brady at 85. Now, the numbers on Brady going into Denver, we all know, are rough. You know, he's had some highly contested games there and some not-so-highly contested games. They're coming off a bye, which is always a positive for Bill Belichick. He doesn't have Chris Hogan most likely in this game, which is a negative. However, I'm starting to wonder if Denver is one of these teams that, you know, we get to this point of the season, I think we've seen Tampa kind of, you know, implode upon itself. We've seen the New York Giants start to implode upon themselves. And I think Denver is, you know, a couple weeks ago when the Giants went in there and beat the pants off Denver, we all looked at each other like, what the hell is that? But really, that was the beginning of the end, when you think about it. And this quote-unquote great defense just gave up a 50 spot.
Mm-hmm. So I think the only thing that changes there is that it is a home game for Denver. So like you said, those Brady numbers on the road in Denver drop off a little bit and without Hogan. But I just think that really just changes where the production is going to come from. I'm sure as a Deion Lewis whisperer, we'll get to this next, when we bring up running backs, but like the pass catching running backs, or if you want to avoid the corners, that just makes Gronk an even better play than usual this week. You know, they funnel the offense up the middle, sort of what Philadelphia could do with Ertz a little bit last week. I know Jeffrey had a great game too, but I think that this offense will be adjusted to sort of take advantage of the weak spots of the Denver defense. Obviously, that's not the corners. I don't expect a huge drop off from Brady, but I think that there are some guys a little bit further down the board that I would prefer to use over Tom Brady. I just think that Brady would be a fine play.
All right, let's go down some of these other ones too. You got Matthew Stafford against Cleveland, coming off a very good game there. He's got a lot of high yardage totals the last couple games. I think things are trending in the right direction. He's at home. I think Stafford's going to be very highly owned, but that doesn't mean it's wrong. Jared Goff was a guy we talked about last week. People probably laughed at us, but who's laughing now?
We are.
Because Jared Goff was, let's just say it, awesome. I mean, let's be frank, 28 points last week. I mean, gotta love that. I think Goff and Stafford are very much in play again this week. Both of them at home, both with good matchups. I think 8,200 is a very workable price. There's then a couple quarterbacks like Ryan and Taylor I don't want to mess around with, especially with Julio out potentially and Devonta Freeman dealing with an injury. There's just a lot of questions with not enough answers for me in Atlanta. I want to talk about Marcus Mariota, because Mariota is finally getting healthy. You heard the coach say this week, too, we want to let him run around a little bit more, and we feel the hamstring is now 100%. This is a defense, Cincinnati, that does struggle against the run. And I'm curious if you think that Mariota might be a sneaky low ownership play this week as he continues to get guys like Corey Davis back in that lineup.
He's definitely an interesting play, and being at home against a Cincinnati team that isn't particularly great against the pass, I think that's interesting. But really, it's tough for me to. He's sort of in that middle ground there, where I'm either thinking the Stafford or Goff 8,200 plays, or I would go down a little bit further. I'll get to this in a second, but I do want to get back to Stafford. Is this like too good to be true? Like, is this going to be one of those ones where the Lions sort of Charlie Brown us? It's like, okay, they're at home against Cleveland. We just saw them dismantle Packers on Monday night. Is this like too good to be true? Is it a bit of a mirage, even though Cleveland, you know, kind of can help matters?
Well, Cleveland defensively, and we'll get to them too later on. Cleveland defensively is a talented defensive team. The problem is the offense puts them in a negative spot all the time and puts them on the field way too much. If this were in Cleveland, I'd agree with you 100%. But I think whenever a team like Cleveland is traveling and you're talking about an away team, I don't think they're going to – I don't think Lucy's going to pull the ball out from under us and we're going to come crashing down and break our skulls and say good grief. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm it's a great point, and don't think that it's lost on me or that I didn't think of it as well and go, oh, I don't know, especially in 2017, which is the year of everything you think is going to work is basically crap. So that's not going to be it. But it's in Detroit, and because mm-hmm. it's in Detroit, I'm going to say that Cleveland is going to be, you know, who we think they are, and they are going to, and look, also, I think the other reason, too, if there was an alternate for Stafford, like if he could turn around and hand the football off a little more or do something like that.
Yeah.
But they can't. They have zero run attack. So,
and they pulled the plug on Abdullah pretty much last week, I thought.
Yeah, and I don't love Stafford. Like, I think he's a 2x value guy. I don't think he's a potential for 3 like Dak is. See, that's why I like Dak so much, because to me, Dak is that 3x value quarterback, especially because Atlanta is just, like I said, they just have nothing going on for them right now. Everything is just starting to swirl downward. Ben Roethlisberger, I think, is the trap this week because he's on the road. Mm-hmm. Without looking, tell me, what do you think the highest point total Ben Roethlisberger's had all year?
Just period?
Yeah, in FanDuel scoring. What would be the number in your head? What was like the highest he's had?
All right, swear to the listeners I'm not looking.
I know, you're an honest guy.
19?
17.
Ah.
He's never had higher than 17 in a game this year. And I just want to point that out for people who are going to be in love with him against the Colts this week. If this were in Pittsburgh, maybe I'd be a little bit more. But, I mean, he is nothing more than a 2x value potential anyway. You want to give him salary relief or you want to think there's upside, okay. But I'm not kidding if I'm saying this. I'd rather have Josh McCown at 74.
Yes, let's go. Yes.
Yes.
First run through making my lineup last night. McCown is who I landed on. Tampa Bay is god-awful defensively. And I think, you know, with Ryan Fitzpatrick being under center and them losing Mike Evans and having no semblance of a ground game, you're just talking about Cleveland's offense just giving the ball back after three and outs constantly. We're going to see a lot of that from Tampa Bay, in my opinion. So I think the Jets are going to get a ton of possessions, and you can really, really attack Tampa Bay through the air. Their corners have been shoddy. I know they made some acquisitions at safety, just haven't panned out for whatever reason. It seems like McCown is starting to click with Robbie Anderson. So I do like Robbie Anderson this week as well at 6,500. I think you could do a lot worse than McCown, and you can really load up elsewhere if you use him at 7,400.
And you've got the great Ryan Fitzpatrick revenge narrative game against the Jets, which, you know, I mean, obviously a hashtag sarcasm here. Right. But, you know, it's funny, between McCown, this is a fun stat I picked up too. Between McCown and Ryan Fitzpatrick, how many NFL teams have they played for?
I'm going to guess 14.
Close, 17. So basically any given week they're playing.
17 is the number of the day.
Right, any given week they're playing, it's a revenge game.
Yeah, more often than not.
Oh, it's just
incredible!
Isn't that incredible? Unbelievable! And you want to talk about another team that's imploding on itself? There you go, the Tampa Bay Bucks with, you know, the Mike Evans situation there.
I love Mike Evans. I was so disappointed to see him just kind of.
I think he's just lost. You know what? Yeah. I think it was just one of those. Everything's just going to crap and you just lose your cool for a moment. So I'm going to give Evans a pass.
Your quarterback says go eat a W before the game, it just messes you up in the head a little bit.
Yeah.
Did you see the Jameis Winston speech?
No, but I saw him stick his finger under the guy's helmet, and that was enough for me to go, dude, what are you doing?
All right, I'll have to send you the Winston pregame speech. Please. It's the most cringeworthy thing I've seen all year.
Eat a W.
It makes no sense.
God, what a moron. All right, Eli Manning at 6,700. It's not for the faint of heart. Okay, this is a complete tournament play only. But the reason I'm saying this is to go back to, what are we looking for? We're looking for value, right? Eli Manning and Evan Engram have a thing going on right now, and it's a very positive thing. Last week was a complete disaster, but the Rams defense is not the 49ers defense. The 49ers defense is god-awful, dreadful. And, you know, they're last against the rush. They're 24th against the pass. And for me, I'm looking at Eli and I'm saying 6,700 as a tournament play, if he should hit 20 points, which is not out of the realm of possibility, you know, pairing him with a Shepherd who's relatively cheap as well, I think there's opportunity if you're doing multiple lineups that Eli Manning in a tournament in multi-entry is worthy of a stash. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you there, man. You know, the 49ers are sort of the great equalizer. You know, if you're looking at cheap quarterback and it's like, oh well, they are going against the Niners, more often than not you're gonna find a way to make it work. And I think that I think that that's certainly the case this week. I think you bring up the good point with Evan Engram. The offense definitely looks different than it did, you know, week two through whenever Odell got hurt. But, you know, they've had a few weeks to kind of get things figured out. Engram and Shepard sort of are the guys now, and it's not always the prettiest. But going against the Niners, I think it makes sense this week.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. I'm there. Like I said, not for the faint of heart. This is not like your one tournament entry, but if you want to go out there, you know, and Eli allows you to go up to the board too and go up and get an Antonio Brown and a Gronk in your lineup. So it's not a terrible play, and I think there's enough floor where I don't think it's going to crush you. You know, I don't see Eli Manning going up there and putting a 10 spot against San Francisco. He's too much of a professional, even though I'm not the biggest Eli fan. All right, let's talk about running backs here. Todd Gurley had himself another good week, but 9,600, I have a tough time.
Can't do it.
No way. Can't do it. Won't do it. Can't do it. Not going to make it happen. Le'Veon Bell, 9,400. Now, this I will do. this I will do, and I will do this all day. I will Le'Veon Bell, and I will Le'Veon Bell hard. And the reason I say to do this is because when I look at Lev Bell, I say, okay, there's an opportunity for, you know, he's going to catch the ball in the backfield. He's going to run the ball. You know the amount of touches is going to be huge. And if they have a lead, it could even increase that amount of touches. And when Ezekiel Elliott's not on the board and Leonard Fournette is fresh off not taking his class picture, you know it's going to be a tough spot there to find those big cash game running backs. And to me, it's Lev Bell.
Yeah, and I think it's also just kind of worth pointing out, you know, as the season has bared out, that the elite receivers, they're getting fewer and fewer and further between. I mean, aside from like your Antonio Browns and you know, DeAndre Hopkins, I think some of that is pumped up from the Deshaun Watson weeks, rest in peace. But running backs have been the much more stable commodity in DFS and in fantasy in general this year. So if you want to go ahead and pay up for you know, something in the 9,000s at a skill spot, running back's the way you go, more so than receiver. Receiver has been a lot more volatile this year. So I tend to have a hard time picking between Bell and Brown. I usually try to get one of them in a given lineup, but I think you got to give it to Bell this time.
Yeah, and you can get Bell and Brown together. And just because you have Bell and Brown doesn't mean you need Roethlisberger this year right now. I'm telling you, sure. I know that sounds like an incongruous, impossible idea to wrap your head around, but I'm telling you, you don't need Roethlisberger. In fact, I think it's actually a negative. You know, Brown is going to be able to be productive. It's the salary that Roethlisberger is and just the lack of upside he's shown you this year where he hasn't gone over 17 points all season. He's already retired. All right, let's talk about Leonard Fournette. You know, I don't know about you, but I keep waiting for the picture of Leonard Fournette with the lasers behind him. You know, like everyone gets that school picture.
Holding a cat, like the Bo Pelini one.
Yeah, like I'm waiting for that meme, and I haven't gotten it on the internet. And I'm just telling you, internet right now, you failed me. You failed me.
What are you doing?
Yeah, what the hell, dude? I mean, where's my Leonard Fournette with the lasers behind him?
Or we get like 280 characters on Twitter, but we can't get one Fournette 90s school picture.
Can I get him with his hands on a piece of wood with leaves behind him with like a nice autumn background? Can I please just get that for the love of God? So Fournette last week, I went on tilt like 10 minutes before lineup lock to get
my lineup streak. I was so mad. I just went to an alpaca farm instead of watching the early window.
I wish I had, but instead I ended up changing things and I ended up taking T.Y. Hilton out of a lineup, which was a big mistake. And I ended up taking Sammy Watkins out of a different lineup to make it. So everything that we talked about Friday, I hope you all listened because I didn't. And because of the last minute Fournette change, I had to make and move pieces around. And I should have just taken the zero for Fournette. I would have been better off. But let's talk about him. I think I'm good with him this week. Mm-hmm. It's the rest of this group here where we go against McCoy and Gordon that I'm starting to get a little concerned because with McCoy and Gordon, New Orleans has played much better defensively. We all know Jacksonville defensively. I don't think either of these guys is a great investment. I think there's a lot of risk here. Yep. If I had to lean one, I'd probably lean McCoy just because of how important he is to the offense. What about you? You want to even dabble with McCoy or Gordon this week?
Yeah, neither of them really get me excited. And you do bring up the great point on New Orleans. That's been one of the kind of pleasant surprises in the entire NFL this year is that the Saints are actually playing defense again. But it's more against the pass than the run that I'd be shying away from. So I'd I'm worried about using a Tyrod. Certainly wouldn't use a Kelvin Benjamin, but McCoy, their run defense is still a little bit soft, so I could see where McCoy works. But yeah, for 600 or 700 less to go to Gordon against a Jags team that totally shut down the Bengals rushing attack, shut down everything. Now that they have Marcell Dareus, the one problem had been their run defense. That's not an issue anymore. So I'm not using Melvin Gordon. I think that he's a trap. And I think just price-wise, I don't think you're going to get a ton of value out of McCoy when you can go 400 up and get Fournette against a terrible run defense.
All right, Jordan Howard at 72 is going to be a lock for 20-plus carries. The trouble is he going to be a lock to go two times value? Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And they're coming off the bye, which one would think that would mean they're going to let Trubisky throw the ball a little bit more and have a couple, you know, just maybe continue to take the reins off a little. So I think a lot of people in the industry right now are talking about Howard and the volume and the volume against Green Bay, and maybe on the other side of that game too with Jones and Montgomery. But I'm telling you right now, I think it's a huge trap staying away from both of them. I will go with Kamara, though, in the in-between and yes, Ingram. Sir. It's funny. Now Ingram is underneath Kamara after the big week.
It's amazing.
And it's only a $100 difference. And I kind of wonder, you know, as great as Kamara has been, now if you take him out of the dome, I wonder if because of the weather's going to be cold, if this is more of a Mark Ingram pound kind of situation where Kamara's ownership might be double that of Ingram.
I think that the ownership, like the game theory there definitely makes a lot of sense where Ingram, even though he is technically cheaper now, I still think that Kamara is going to be the guy that you'll see in a lot more lineups this week, but I still think it's worth it. Even with that all in play, I think Ingram would be a fine play in his own right, but I think Kamara, the way that they use him is so creative. Use him sort of as like the de facto like third option in the passing game. I think that there's no way that he doesn't go for, you know, at least double digit points. Does he get you the two times value? That's where I'm a little bit concerned. But I think Buffalo's defense as a whole, like if you look at their season long numbers, they still look like a pretty competent unit. But I would guess over the last 4 or 5 weeks that unit as a whole has taken a pretty big step back. So I think the Saints still have a pretty easy time scoring on them, and I think Kamara is a big reason why.
All right, the next guy that I really like on the list today is Jerick McKinnon at 66. You know, with everybody talking about the quarterback situation up there with Minnesota, and, you know, I know they're on the road to Washington, but, you know, I feel like with Kamara playing as well as he did last week and some of the other running backs here with Alfred Morris getting so much attention, that the guy kind of lost in the shuffle is Jerick McKinnon, who in his last four games, three of the last four, he had 22-plus points. And I want to say that again because I feel like it's being lost on people. 22-plus points at 6,600 against a Washington defense that, you know, I don't care what – I mean, they're mediocre. They're completely mediocre. They're middle of the road across the board. And the only game that he didn't play well against was in, you know, against Baltimore. And Baltimore defensively, we all know, we've seen a couple weeks now, you know, they show up and they have a ton of talent. And they did what they had to do.
That was just a weird Latavius Murray game, too.
It was also a weird Latavius Murray game. Right. So that was just an odd one. But 20-something points, I mean, this is like Fournette territory. Mm-hmm. This is Le'Veon Bell territory. And he's 6,600. If you're making a lineup this week and it doesn't have McKinnon in it, I think you're just doing it wrong.
I think you're right. I mean, those are all really good points. And really, I think just we got another week where I think the Vikings go a little bit more ground heavy. And I think going against Washington, that's a good thing. Washington's coming off of like a total slugfest of a game this past week against Seattle, whereas Minnesota's going to be fresh off the bye. I do like McKinnon a fair bit.
All right, let's talk about Bilal Powell, because I guess we have to. At Tampa Bay with Forte questionable and really trending in a bad direction. There will be some people who want to take that opportunity again against Tampa. I personally can't get there. You know, I've been burned on Powell a couple of times this year. We had the opportunity. It didn't work out. Deion Lewis, who you mentioned now, I am the Deion Lewis whisperer. This is at Denver, a tricky spot. That's for sure. That Denver defense against the run's been pretty good. I'm going to say no. I'm not. No Deion Lewis this week.
Okay.
I'm going to say it. And in fact, if I have to pick a Patriots running back, it's going to be Rex Burkhead this week. There you
Dang.
Go.
Okay.
It's the Rex Burkhead week. We'll see if I'm right this week. And if not, then by all means, everyone can make fun of me. All right, let's talk about the elephant in the room, Alfred Morris, 5,400, who, you know, right now, it seems to be Alfred Morris is going to be the guy, or at least the lead. But to me, that's not a definitive circumstance. That's not a, here you go, here's 20 carries. I mean, what's your expectation here for him? You think he gets, you know, 15 carries and somebody else gets 10 and McFadden gets 5? Like, or how do you think this shakes out here?
Yeah, I think Morris, he'll at least get like the most carries of that backfield, but I would set the over, like over under at like 13.5 carries, honestly. And then they,
that's
just
a good number.
Yeah, and then they just kind of mix it with McFadden and Rod Smith the rest of the way. I think they really try to go heavy on the pass there, as they kind of start to figure things out in without Ezekiel Elliott. So I really don't expect a ton from this rushing attack, even against the Falcons, who are pretty bad against the run in general. I just think that either of these guys, they're going to take value away from the other. So I just don't see a situation where this really works out very well for anyone that goes that route.
No, and I know we're spending a lot of time on the running backs today, but I think we have to, just because of the way the slate is looking. And it's a tricky spot. I mean, because kind of like that Oakland situation a couple weeks ago when Lynch was out, I think we said, whichever one you pick, you'll probably be wrong.
Yeah.
I kind of feel it's the same way right now. Until there's a little bit more clarity, I don't want to make an investment in it. If you do a multi-entry and you want to have one in one and one in the other because they're the same price in another lineup, that's fine. Like, I get that strategy and you're hoping you can hit, but not everybody has that kind of bankroll to play those kinds of contests. So last two guys I want to talk about, Devontae Booker, who I think is going to start trending in the right direction. Last week, the game script did not go in his way at all. I think in full point PPR, he's a guy you should keep in mind, because I think he's going to catch the ball as well. And the last one is Darkwa, who
there
I don't
you go.
Love, but I keep coming back to the same thing where at 5,300, he's had a couple 13-point games. Again, last week, not a game that went in his game script at all. Not a lot of, you know, opportunity there. So for me, I think this is where I'm looking at. And I'm looking at those guys as those are your dart throws of the week at running back that deserve attention if you want to get strange and do some multi-entry work. All right, let's go to wide receiver. Antonio Brown, we already talked about him, top of the board, love him. A.J. Green, not so much. Did you enjoy the A.J. Green fight? You know.
As a fellow Georgia Bulldog, I was kind of sad about it. I don't think he came out of that looking particularly good. And then
I thought he had a pretty good takedown.
Yeah, but like you wish it was straight up, though, instead of coming from behind. I don't know. Yeah, that whole thing kind of bummed me out. And then, like I said, Ramsey just kind of dragging him in the media afterward. That was rough to watch. But, A.J. Green for 7,900, he's probably fine there. And certainly, like, you're picking him over like, a hampered Julio Jones in an offense that somehow forgot how to make him work. So I like Green in that sense. But I'm probably trying to shy away from this upper tier of receivers this week.
Yeah, outside of Brown, that's the one. Now, without Hogan, Cooks is, I think, more in play, but still, it's a tough sell. I mean, it's 76. I'd rather go down, especially when you got Michael Thomas dealing with an injury, Dez with an injury, groin for Hilton. You know, the receiver is tough, and that's why we spent so much time on running back, because I think it's crucial you get that right this week.
Yes.
But you got guys like Golden Tate at 74, and Marvin Jones we'll talk about too. Those are two guys that I think are, you know, Marvin Jones' red zone targets have been way up this year, and I think that bears witness, and Golden Tate's volume's been very strong. Those two guys in particular, I am very high on this week. If you had to pick one, would you go Tate or would you go Jones?
I think Jones probably right now. I know that last week sort of shows what he can do when the Lions are clicking correctly and those red zone looks. And Jones, you know, for not being like the biggest guy, he really goes and gets it. Like, he plays with that sort of tenacity where he plays bigger than he is. And especially, and that really obviously helps his case in the red zone. And I don't really think that either of those Browns corners are going to be able to stop him. So I would go with Jones. I think the floor is a lot safer with Tate, and you know, those yards after the catch are money in the bank. He's like the best guy at that in the league. So you can't go wrong with either, but I probably think that Jones has a bit more touchdown upside.
All right, I'm going to read some targets for you and tell me if you get excited about these. 8, 8, 8, 13, 12, 10. That exciting volume for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Who is this?
Adam Thielen.
There we go.
At only 7,000. Now, you know, say what you will. We already talked about McKinnon, but I know Thielen hasn't always returned. He's only got one touchdown in the red zone this year, but he's had a lot of targets there. And with Stephon Diggs continuing to kind of struggle back a little bit, I think Thielen is very much in play this week, and I think that's one you really should pay attention to. And you know what? You know, one more thing, too, about Jones and Tate. You know, there was enough for them last week.
Totally.
Both of them had good games. There's no reason you have to choose. We're just trying to pick them apart this way. I don't like Kelvin Benjamin this first shot out of the gate, but I will say in this lower tier, Robbie Anderson at 65, I think, is highly intriguing.
Yes, I do too, and it kind of stinks looking right here because I think there's a lot to be had from this specific tier, even like $300 more expensive. I know Demaryius Thomas is a little bit banged up, but you know that New England doesn't have a great secondary right now, so I think Thomas, just by virtue of the volume, makes a little bit of sense. And I think that, you know, people just look at the fact that Brock Osweiler is going to be starting and probably just take any Denver guy off their board, but I think Thomas makes some sense. But Anderson, he's been seeing great target volume, and again, like we let off the show with, the Tampa Bay secondary is just putrid, and I think Anderson, you know, big fast guy, you know, 6'3" that runs like a 4.4. Mm-hmm. He's got the talent to really make them pay. I'm interested to hear your take on Juju Smith-Schuster because I think I like him a lot, but you know, if it's between Anderson or Smith-Schuster, I think Anderson's a safer play, but I do like Juju a lot this week as well.
I like Juju, but I think I'd rather go Anderson because I think, you know, you can always have that moment. See, there's nobody to steal Robbie Anderson's thunder. You know what I mean? Brown and Bell could absolutely ruin a Smith-Schuster day because, I mean, it's very easy for him to have three catches for 30 something because we've seen that. We've seen those kind of games. Yeah. It's harder for Robbie Anderson and the Jets to do that because they kind of need him. I think the need base of Robbie Anderson is so much higher that for the same price, to me, it's a no-brainer. And he's got three touchdowns in his last three games. Anderson, to me, is definitely a lock. As you continue to go down this grouping, you know, we did get Watkins right. I just want to, you know, throw that out there for now and then when we get an Alex Collins wrong, you know, we get two Sammy Watkinses and we got Sammy right this past week.
That's been a thing that's been hard to get right this year. So I feel particularly good about that.
Yeah, I feel very, it was very life affirming to watch him. I don't care if it's one big catch. I don't care. It's all he needs. That's what Sammy Watkins has always been. You just got to understand when the opportunity is there. And with Jenkins out, that was the opportunity. Jordy Nelson's bottomed out at 64. I want nothing to do with any of the Packers. I'm sorry, Wisconsin. I'm out. Mohamed Sanu will be a trendy pick this week, but I'm warning everyone, with Julio out, if Sanu should have to move to the outside, I don't think that's as good for his value as it is when he's playing in the other spot. So I'm not at 59. It's not a terrible risk. I just don't think it has the upside people want it to have if Julio Jones is not on the field. If he is on the field, I think Sanu comes back into play.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, a potential role change I think would be a little bit concerning. But you know, in a vacuum, say Julio Jones is playing, do you like him or do you like Corey Davis for $100 less?
Yeah, this is a problem for me because you know I love Corey Davis. I'm a Corey Davis fan. I would probably go with Sanu because I'm still waiting for Corey Davis to get integrated and fully up to speed, and I worry about the snap count. I know it's going to be higher this week than it was last week, but I would lean Sanu just a hair. I know Sterling Shepard will be popular at 57 too. There's a lot of guys here. Even go down to the Goodwins of the world too in Tampa if you want to try that kind of a dart throw.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I think that's actually viable this week. Like, I'm glad you brought him up, but 4,500, stepping into a starting role without Mike Evans. Chris Godwin is really, really effing good. I watched him.
He is.
Like, I was huge on him in college. I was surprised he fell to where he did in the draft. And you know, I think it's just the virtue of Tampa Bay having veteran, pricey star veterans and DeSean Jackson and Mike Evans sort of blocking him from getting on the field. So this is kind of a one-week deal. I don't love Godwin the rest of the way for season long this year, but I think he makes a ton of sense. And Fitzpatrick, for how mediocre of a quarterback he actually is, he does try to push the ball downfield a fair bit. I think in terms of air yards, most of his passes average out at around 10 yards, which is pretty solid for down the field. So I think Godwin definitely is in play at 4,500 if you're pinched and you need a minimum salary guy.
Cole Beasley and Terrence Williams too, depending on the Dez status as you get closer. That's one to worth monitor, especially Beasley in the full PPR. He could be a very tricky play. All right, over 2.5 million players have won cash prizes playing on FanDuel. To take advantage of our special offer for new users, sign up today at FanDuel.com/RotoWire and you'll get a free 6-month RotoWire subscription plus entry into the NFL Sunday Million, which offers more than 1 million in cash prizes with your first deposit on FanDuel. Just visit FanDuel.com/RotoWire, void where prohibited. All right, let's do the tight ends. Gronk, obviously, I'm going to say it's a Gronk smash week. We go back and forth whether it is or it isn't. We've had a very good record on this. I'm going to say it is, especially with them needing to go and play a little bit more physical with Denver. I think a lot of Gronkowski in this one. Evan Ingram is 100% in play this week at 74. Totally. And it's at $700 less than Gronk, I think a better value by far this week. You know, you just take a lot of that risk out with Gronk.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And Ingram just sees such a heavy target volume now that, you know, pretty much he's like the last guy standing. He's fellow Ole Miss alum, just like Eli. So, like you said, the chemistry is certainly there. And going against San Francisco, they can't stop anyone, you know, whether it's out wide or from the tight end spot or where Evan Ingram plays from. So, yeah, I like him the most out of the tight ends this week from a combination of price and upside.
Now, it's not a great tight end week. I know Jordan Reed's trending in the right direction. You got Brayton now playing with Fitzpatrick, which I think will still be okay. But I think the guy that if I'm going to fade the top group, I'm not fading too far. I'm not worried about any of these other guys. I'm not playing around O.J. Howard. I'm not playing around with Kyle Rudolph, even though the matchup is good. I'm just not doing it. You know, Rudolph, you can make a case for. But to me, it's Austin Seferian Jenkins against Tampa. They struggle with the tight end as well. And I'll tell you what, too. Jenkins should have more touchdowns on the season already. He should have two more that have really just not gone his way. So if you add those and you're looking at a guy that's got 5 touchdowns on the season already in limited work, I think that's a very impressive body for Austin Seferian Jenkins. And, you know, the target volume has been pretty decent as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, outside, if you wanted to get a part of that Jets pass game that, and you don't go the Robbie Anderson route, then Seferian Jenkins, I think, is the obvious next guy to get at. And again, I think we both just agree that Tampa Bay's secondary isn't really going to be able to slow down even the Jets. Like, that's how bad it's gotten. Even a Josh McCown Jets team is going to put up points on them. So Seferian Jenkins definitely going to get in on the action, be a part of that.
All right, now the Jacksonville Jaguars defense has been absolutely brilliant. They're 5,200. Although they're not the top of the board, they're still the best defense on the planet. The Rams are higher priced than them because you've got, you know, Tom Savage coming into town, but I would still rather have Jacksonville, to tell you the truth. You know, it's just makes sense.
More turnover upside.
Well, yeah, and you know, Rivers is apt to throw a couple picks too.
Yes.
So there's a lot of turnovers there for Jacksonville. The only other defense, as you continue to go down, I want to talk about two real quick before we head out of here. New Orleans Saints at 44. I think there's a great opportunity there for them. I'm a little concerned about the weather, you know, how they're going to transition. But, look, they've played very, very well. And at 44, I think they're the best value. And then it bears witness here. The Cleveland Browns defense is 3,500. Now, I know they're not, you know, a great fantasy defense. However, do you kind of look at that and go, well, I just need 7.
Yeah.
And they've, you know, that's all I need. And then it allows me to go up so far because we're not talking like they're 4K. They're 3,500.
Right. Yeah. That is insanely cheap. I mean, that's got to be, you know, the cheapest entity period on the board. And then didn't we use this strategy a few weeks ago and it worked out pretty well? I think we might have picked like Indianapolis against a good offense or something like that. And it actually paid off. So sometimes these really, really cheap defenses, if you pick the right matchup or, you know, you just frame it correctly where you just don't need a ton of points from them. You just, like you said, you just need 7, you need 2x value. It makes some sense. And Cleveland can get to the quarterback and Myles Garrett's going to be back. I'm going against Detroit's offensive line. So I think we could see some sack totals there, maybe a turnover from one of the running backs, and voila, then you don't have just a total 0 from your defense.
All right, here we go. The bonus question of the week. Last week, John McKechnie got on the board again. The question was, it was a nail biter, and it came in late because it was a while there. It was looking pretty good. It was, who's going to score more points, the Colts defense or Tom Savage? John took Savage. I took the Colts D. Colts D scored 8, so I was pleased because that was what I was looking for them. I wanted their 2x value, and they gave it to me. Well done, Colts. And then on the other side, it was Tom Savage and 10.76. You just did it by 2.7. I mean, there's your nail biter. So John McKechnie is on the. It's getting close now. 5 for John, 6 for me, 1 tie on the year so far. This week's question: who will score more, Jacksonville defensive points or Big Ben Roethlisberger, who I already said has not scored more than 17 points in any given week? I'm going to take the Jacksonville defense. Which way are you going there? Will you take the Ben Roethlisberger against the Colts?
I'll go the bad quarterback one more time because it worked for me last time, and that it worked somehow with Tom Savage. So I think that Roethlisberger has a bad game overall, but I still think that there's enough talent around him to just pump up his overall bottom line here. So I'll go Roethlisberger. I feel terrible about it, though.
Excellent. I love when you feel dirty about it. If you feel dirty and alone on a Friday night, you can tweet at John McKechnie, at Johnny McCax. You can follow
me. I'll respond.
Hey, what are you wearing? You can follow him at Johnny McCax. You can follow me at Joe Pizzapia 17. For everybody here at RotoWire, have a great weekend of Daily Fantasy.